Hi there, if you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system which is usually in the bottom right hand corner to send messages back and forth to Kualu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Kualu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Kualu for this affiliate link. Hi there, if you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talks podcasts and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcasts that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show. Welcome to Becoming Heisenberg. It's Entertainment Talks podcast for Breaking Bad on AMC and Netflix. I'm your host Matthew. Joining me today, my co-host is David. How's it going?
I'm doing very well, thanks.
Excellent. This is for season 3, episode 7. You've got 1 minute. What did you think of this episode?
It's fantastic. I mean, this is one of the ones that I think is up there in the sort of, I don't know, top 10, top 5 of episodes of the show, I think. Particularly the Hank and the cousin stuff is one of those iconic moments that really sticks out. And it's one of the things that you remember, even though, you know, as we've said, as going through this, like, oh, I'd never remembered that scene. You know, that's one scene that I do remember quite clearly. So it's just a really, really solid episode all the way through this. There were elements of the thing that I don't remember. I don't remember them going to buy the jackets, I have no recollection of that. The stuff with the young versions of the kids and Hector, I don't remember that bit. I kind of remembered the things going south with Gail and Walt, although I hadn't remembered the exact way that played out. So, but yeah, I mean, the actual sort of scene in the car park where I did remember, and it was great seeing that again and seeing how it all fitted together.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was, I think I mentioned the end of last week's one or the last episode, and I said, like, oh yeah, it sort of triggered in my mind what was gonna happen in the next, like, the this one was coming up next. And yeah, the cousins again are just such an intriguing, strange, mystery.
Yeah,
and they get that great bit of, like, background at the start. That was really good. Loads of great stuff in this episode, really. But the Hank one's a bit that sticks out particularly, of course.
Yeah,
it's just that bit at the end of, like, fumbling the bullet back in, and his hands are all wet, and the fact that he could have gotten killed, but he's like, oh, it was too easy, and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, lots of great stuff. So also some interesting development for Jesse as well. Some quite big stuff there. So no, it's fantastic all around. It's the mid-season ish, or just past the mid-season point of the season. So another absolutely just
brilliant one. So, all right, that's kind of it for the pre-talk at the moment. Well, that's it for the pre-talk. Let's do some housekeeping, let you know what else we've been up to, and then we'll get into our recap where we can dig into some stuff. See you in a minute. All right, it's been again another busy week on Entertainment Talk, following obviously from last week. I did the chat podcast yesterday because it's now September 1st. So I did the August 2023 version, gave a little bit of a mental health update, which I haven't done for a bit, but that's not the sort of thing you talk about, you know, every single podcast or whatever. So I was due to do that, but I was kind of, you know, need to be ready to talk about that sort of stuff. Not that there's anything, you know, crazy going on, but just, it's just the way that kind of, those kinds of conversations go. So I talked a bit about that, talked about Trump because, of course, you know, the famous photo that's going around of him with the mugshot and stuff. He tried to sell that on a t-shirt yesterday. I saw
he's been trying to make money out of it. I had a conversation with a friend of mine about if I was the Fulton Police Department, I would be claiming copyright on that photo. take Trump for everything he's trying to use it for, but yes. Anyway,
talked all about that and some other stuff as well. Did a video game review this week as well. As for Oxenfree 2, I gave it a don't skip rating. That was a bit more of a challenging one to review just because of my own opinion, not because of anything to do with the game, but that was still very, very fun to try and figure out as well, so that was a good one. Did a podcast called talking about the future of Toy Story, debating as to, okay, what could we get after Toy Story 5, what do I want from the franchise as opposed to what will probably actually happen, all those kinds of fun things. Toy Story has been on the mind, I mean it always is, but you know, more sort of recently. So there was that one, that was fun as well. Did a must-see review for Hijack season 1. That was a really great show as well, from Idris Elba in a lead role on Apple TV Plus. Don't know if that's getting a second season or how you do a second season, but you watched that and enjoyed that, didn't you?
No, that was good.
Yeah, so that's Hijack Season 1 on Apple TV+. Main Night also continued as well. Beat Nottingham Forest by 3-2. We were not 5-0 down. We were 2-0 down in the first 5 minutes, and we all wondered what the hell was going on. And then we did a comeback, which was always good as well. We got Arsenal on Sunday, and then for some odd reason, there's an international break, even though the season's just started. So... cool. Time for more of our players to go off and get injured, probably. Also, today marks the end of the transfer deadline day. Hopefully, we'll sign Amrabat by the end of the day. And who knows, maybe one other surprise, but we shall see. Gaming talk last week, we talked about Little Nightmares 3, Call of Duty, and Starfield. So there's some stuff about that. Also, classic reviews. Reminder as well, Season 6 is coming soon. I've finished creating it. But if you don't want to wait for Season 6 to come out, there is 5 seasons plus a bonus one. So if you want to check out what all that's about, it's available on the site and the podcast platforms and stuff like that. So that was great to do as well. Did a podcast also called Discussing the Saudi Football Situation, which is still ongoing. Lots of players are being tempted by even more money than they've already got. so there's that situation as well. And that's what we've been doing recently on entertainmenttalk.org and on podcast platforms. A flashback in Mexico shows a younger Lionel Salamanca complaining to his uncle, Hector, about a broken toy. Toy being broken by Lionel's twin brother, Marco, with Lionel proclaiming that he wishes he was dead. In response, Hector shoves Marco's head into a tub of icy water, despite Lionel's objections, and finally releases him. After Lionel punches Hector while proclaiming La Familia es todo, that's the best you're going to get from me, I can't even believe I did that, family is all. I can pronounce certain, like, you know, Spanish and Brazilian footballers' names.
I know, you did so that quite well.
Yeah. So, I get used to that sometimes. It says family is all in the present. Lionel and Marco light candles at a makeshift Santa Marietta shrine in the center. The twins place a new photo, this time of Hank, not the Heisenberg anymore. They've been called off from him, remember. The new target is Hank Schrader, but he has no idea. I mean, neither did Heisenberg, but still. Yeah, Hector doing some things here. A very, very interesting scene with all three characters involved. I thought it was a great scene, a great way to start off the episode, and a good way to do the bookend thing of getting a little bit more backstory in with the twins, because they're still, again, kind of not as much of a mystery as, let's say, someone like Mandalorian, who's got, like, doesn't speak much, grunts a little bit, has a helmet on. Not to that degree. You can at least see some facial expressions and stuff. Not that these guys even do that much, but there's a different type of mystery there. But I think mysterious characters like this are very, very cool, because it leaves you to sort of work out more about them and that sort of thing. So that's very cool as well. I sort of remembered like half of this opening scene, and I was like, does he kill his brother here? Surely he doesn't. And then he kind of kept saying is like, is that all you've got? Is that all that you can do? And he's trying to push him more and more, because he's trying to like wiggle Hector's arm, and it's like, hey, it's not really working. Yeah. And obviously you've got, what, a 50, 60-ish year old man against, what, a teenage boy, maybe like 15 or maybe
he's
over
probably
a
minute. Not even that. He's yeah. probably about 12.
12, something like that. He's not going to out-muscle him in any way, shape or form. So a slap or a sort of punch is the way to do it. Yeah, very good scene to start the episode. What do you think?
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting. There's some lovely little bits in that, because not only does it establish the sort of upbringing that those two kids had. It's funny because they're referred to as cousins and brothers and twins. And I mean, that, as far as we're aware, they're brothers, aren't they, I think?
I always knew them just as the cousins. Like, that was that sort of nickname.
Yeah, but I think they are actually brothers, because they do, in this scene, they are referred to as brothers. And they're not twins because they're different ages. But so there's sort of that, but it shows the kind of upbringing that they were given and how kind of brutal that, you know, particularly Hector was with them, and how he kind of almost trained them to be the people that they ended up being. It's also interesting because this is the first time we see Hector prior to the accident, because, of course, I mean, we see him in Better Call Saul prior to the accident, but this is the first time in the main show that we see him prior to him being in the wheelchair. I say accident, I mean, it was kind of intentional, but yes.
Mm-hmm.
What is interesting, and there's a lovely little nod in that, if you look at the seat Hector is sitting in that scene, it's a wooden carved seat with like wheels on the side. So it's a really subtle little sort of foreshadowing of what's about to come. But the seat is like a carved wooden seat, and it's got like cartwheels carved on the side. So go back and have a look at that. It's an interesting little idea. I happened to spot that when I was watching it. Mm. It's a really great little opening. Just says so much about, like, you sort of go and understand, okay, that's why they're the way that they are, because if that's the treatment that they were getting off Hector, you know, and presumably their parents, it's no great shock that they turned out the way that they did, really, you know. So
Furious that he was tricked into believing that his wife was in the hospital, Hank goes to Jesse Pinkman's house and attacks him as he opens the door. He knocks Jesse out cold before realizing he's gone too far. Paramedics come and wheel Jesse away to the hospital as Hank is stood by in shock at his own actions. Walter White and Saul Goodman arrive at the hospital and meet Jesse. Walt notes that they would be in jail if they had not tricked Hank after Jesse blames him for his predicament. Jesse also claims that he will make Hank's life miserable. He explains it in very, very big detail. And despite Sol's objections, threatens to hand Walt to the DEA if he or Sol intervenes. At the fifth, when it comes to his actions at Jesse's house, he's informed that Jesse is filing charges for his actions. And then there's some bits later about Hank as well. Let me just see if gets a call. Yeah, we could talk about that as well. Because Hank hands in his badge. I'm just seeing if that's actually in my notes. But we can talk about that in a minute. Yeah, it's again, I think this gets into Breaking Bad gray, not gray characters, sorry, that doesn't make any sense. Gray area characters, in terms of you fully understand why Hank has done this,
Yeah.
but it doesn't make it good or bad. In fact, it's a bad decision only in the way of it's not smart.
Yeah.
There may be some people. It depends on maybe what you think of Jesse as well as a character. Because even though for me, when I was first watching the show, it was simply, I'm not specifically rooting for Walt, but I just want his family to get the money because they're the innocent ones, especially the children, of course. And then you point that back to, okay, him partnering with Jesse, does that make Jesse innocent or good or bad, or how does it paint him? And Breaking Bad's so good at complicating that in terms of, okay, here's this character, here's a bunch of stuff that they've done. Are they good, bad, innocent, gray area? Have they done the morally right thing, the morally gray thing? And across the series, it's been debated as to, okay, who's done what good and bad and all those sorts of things. And this is where we kind of get into that a little bit. Because at this point, I mean, at this specific point in the series, I don't think you'd say Jesse's a bad person or a bad character. He's made some, well, obviously illegal choices and things, but so have people like Saul, who are supposed to not do, illegal things, but then he's the criminal lawyer that's helping the criminal people. So you've got that as well. So, I mean, to Hank, yeah, obviously Jesse absolutely deserved it, but obviously you get that bit of pullback when he's pummeling Jesse into the ground and he gets that look on his face that, like, oh, I realize what I've done. I'm snapping myself out at the moment. And then, I mean, what he could have also done is left him there and just ran off and just, pretended he didn't do it, or I don't know, something like that. But someone's like, so he's going there with somewhat good, well, at least towards his wife and the whole revenge thing intentions, realizes he's made a bad choice, and then kind of reverses that and thinks, okay, how do I attempt to fix this situation? Which he does do because he calls the ambulance, he gets Jesse some help because he could have just left him there on the floor. It would have been there for a few hours because he was just knocked out. Like, if Jesse gets a call from somebody, he's not answering that. Because he's not conscious, and then hands in his badge and his gun later, which almost accidentally gets him in some trouble, but he's not aware of that. So, yeah, it's a very, very interesting sort of chain of events here. But then when you go over to the bed scene, you kind of understand Jesse's like, I'm gonna make this man's life a misery because he just beat me up really badly, and then tries to add the bits on top with Walt and stuff. So it's yeah, again, not straightforward. I mean, the scene itself is straightforward, but all the intentions and
Yeah.
bits and bobs are not very straightforward, but that's kind of the idea. So, and that is where good writing comes in, because you look at something like a scene like this, okay, it looks basic on the surface. You put bad writers in that writer's room and they won't turn out so good. So,
Yeah.
anyway, what do you think of these couple of scenes here?
Yeah, no, I very much with you. It is a really interesting scene because Hank's reaction is entirely understandable. I mean, he's really wound up because he's got pulled away from, he's got the guy. He stood outside this camper that he's been chasing all over the place. He stood outside the RV. He knows Jesse is inside. He gets that call to send him to the hospital because they've said Marie's had this accident. He gets there, finds out it's a hoax. He knows that Jesse's done it, goes back, the RV's been destroyed. and then drive straight to Jesse's house, and he's amped up, and you know, he has these questions of okay, you know, how did you do that? How did you know who my wife was? You know, you've just blown the one chance I had of getting the RV. You know, I mean, there's a whole bunch of things of anger and frustration. And I mean, Jesse, as I say, Jesse's a character that is a good person that makes bad choices. Hank is also a good person that in this instance made a bad choice. But equally, like you say, he could have just beat the crap out of Jesse and gone, oh crap, oh shit, and run off. You know, he could have done that. And he doesn't. He makes the right choice, the right moral choice of going, okay, I went too far, I need to call this in, you know, because otherwise that kid could die, and, you know, that's going to be in even more trouble. And it's the right thing to do, you know, so he calls it in. So Hank is one of the few characters in the show that I don't think he is a great character. He is a good character. He, you know, he is trying to do the right thing. He made a bad choice here, but an entirely understandable choice. And whilst we're rooting for Jesse, Jesse kind of had that. You know, I mean, I don't want to say, hey, I'm probably wrong to say he had it coming, but I mean, the entire situation is understandable why Hank is so angry about that and confused and upset. He did the wrong thing, but he also did the right thing after he lashed out. So, you know, the stuff in the hospital of Jesse, I mean, that side of things. You know, Sol's basically saying you're golden because the DEA is not going to touch you now. And he's right in that regard. You know, they're not going to want this to come out. But if Jesse then does what he's threatening to do and makes that great speech of, like, you know, how he's basically going to haunt Hank, then the DEA are going to be forced into a position of turning over everything. And if they do that, that threatens everybody. And Jesse's not thinking about that. He's only really thinking about getting revenge at that point. And again, that's a bad decision, but an understandable one. So that's what makes Walt's reaction and Walt's decision later. You know, it's sort of, I don't want to say keep your enemies close, but it is sort of that when Walt makes the decision later on. It is him going, you know, it's the thing of Jesse's better inside the tent pissing out than outside the tent pissing in. You know, it's that sort of, you know, you don't want him running around out there potentially causing problems. You want him somewhere where you can keep an eye on him. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, dear. Skylar visits Walt at his condo. He initially believes she is mocking him, but she pleads with him to pacify Jesse so that Hank does not face charges. Walt refuses, despite Skylar's assertion that Hank is his family, and asks her to leave. This is, well, probably the scene I have the least bit of maybe opinion on, but It's kind of like, you're with Walt here, you're kind of, okay, why are you coming around? Like, you wanted me to move out and stuff, and here you are, and all this sort of thing. It's sort of just to cover her back, really, because, I mean, her person that she was going to see, not therapist, the other person, was saying to her, like, okay, make sure you're not sort of accidentally complicit and this kind of thing, is really sort of the only reason she's going round there. So I kind of, I'm with Walt a little bit more here, in terms of, like, you're kind of here just to cover your back and stuff. But it's kind of a quick little, it's still an important one, but it's kind of one of the quicker scenes in the episode. So what did you think of it?
Well, Yeah, and I mean, I understand Skylar's concern here as well. I mean, but yeah, you know, she's going to say, "Can you get?" Well, she goes first of all to and Walt denies that it would come back to him, so that's the first thing she wants to check. The and I mean, of course, it would come back to him. I mean, he's lying about that, but also, you know, she's like going, "Hank's your." You know, Hank's your brother-in-law. You should be helping out. He's family. And well, comes back with the not currently. And you're like, I mean, that just is so much tension between the pair of them. And she does make a snarky remark when she comes in. She makes a remark about, hey, this drug business must be paying really well when she sees the condo. You know, so yeah, you can understand why Walt's kind of slightly sort of not really that interested in helping her, and particularly helping Hank get out of trouble. Because I mean, from Walt's point of view, if Hank loses his, you know, he's no longer a DEA agent, that's less of an issue, you know, and something that he doesn't have to worry about. So it's probably better off if that is the case. Yeah, Walt would be happy, I think, to see the back of Hank as a DEA agent. The problem is, if Jesse goes after him, the flip side of that is the chance that the DEA starts turning over everything in Jesse's life and make the connection back to Walt. So, I mean, it is in his best interest to get Jesse to back off. And I mean, Sol says the same thing as well, you know. And when that last conversation between Sol and Walt is like, he talks about them may having to discuss options in quote marks. So yeah, I mean, it's a good scene between the pair of them because, you know, they're coming at it. They kind of both want the same thing, you know. They both want Jesse to back off, but Walt is not gonna do it purely for Hank, you know. So
In the desert, Leonel and Marco meet with a trucker driver hawking an array of weapons. He gives them a free hollow point bullet and shows off his bulletproof vest, which Leonel and Marco test by shooting him at point blank range. He survives. They purchase the two vests and leave him on the floor complaining about possible broken ribs. I sort of remembered some of this scene, and I thought, did they just shoot him in the head and leave him there, or like, what did they do exactly? All they want is those vests. He's like, hey, I've got all these bullets and all these guns. They just want their pistols. That's it. I mean, I don't know how these exchanges go, obviously, but I kind of would have thought, like. Okay, because what he maybe should have done was say like, "Hey, I've got two bulletproof vests," but not mention that he's got one on, because then they, I mean, he doesn't
Well,
die.
I mean,
It ends fine. He doesn't die, but it's
yeah.
still a bit risky.
I mean, what's interesting as well is this. I think this is the only time we actually hear the cousins talk in English in the entire show. And I mean, we
I
very
think
rarely
so,
hear them
yeah.
talk anyway, but they have a couple of little lines here. And I get why he shows them. Because, you know, he's basically saying, because they say, do they work? And he's like, yeah, of course they work. I wear one all the time. You know, so I get why, you know, he's trying to make a sale. That's what he tells them. So, yeah, and I know he could have, like, not shown them that, but it was I mean, he didn't know who he was dealing with. He was kind of perfectly happy to sort of, he's just trying to make a sale, you know. And it's not like, I mean, they're perfectly comfortable with shooting the guy because either the bullet stops it and it's fine, or the bullet doesn't stop it and he's dead and the vests don't work. So, you know, I mean, from their mentality, it's fine either way. And it's not like he's going to go and complain to anybody because, you know, you're selling illegal guns. So.
But no, good bit of build up to what we, well, aren't supposed to know but do know is
yes,
coming
going.
Up. Although we do know they're after Hank. We just don't, you're not supposed to exactly know when, obviously. But it's a good bit of build up because you know why they're buying this. So later at the lab, Gale attempts to be friendly with Walt, but he gives him the cold shoulder. He forces a disagreement with Gale and later convinces a reluctant Gus to make Jesse his partner again. At the hospital, Walt pitches the job to Jesse, who mocks it as a ploy to save Hank. He initially refuses, citing Walt's previous wrongdoings against him and his criticism of Jesse's meth. Walt admits that Jesse's meth is good, as good as Walt's own, and leaves. Jesse eventually calls Walt and says he agrees to the partnership. Interesting little interaction because between him and Gale, Walton and Gale, or is it Heisenberg here, maybe? Because they notice like the process isn't going as it should, and Walt notices there's something off. What did you set it to? I suppose you're supposed to be 85. It was 75. Yeah, he's supposed to set it to 85, and it's 75. And obviously, Walt's got a couple of problems here. Obviously, is that they have to throw away. As he said, did he say 50 gallons of whatever this sludge is, which is a lot, and that's going to waste time. And we know how particular Walt is about this. Well, not just how particular he is, but this is obviously a very, very like specific process and all that. And it's just too late by that point. Like, what's Gale supposed to do about, you know, there's nothing he can really say here to make Walt any happier. And he's, like, it's interesting because in the last episode, and obviously there's been some time passed and they've been working together for a bit. And there's the bit where they try and have a conversation and Walt sort of asks him about, hey, have you got this ready and that ready? And it does come across as like, okay, Gale is this guy who's in a bit of a midlife crisis. And in obviously that middle sort of age, and he hasn't got a lot going on outside of here, so he's had more time, I suppose, to, oh yeah, I've done this particular bit and that particular bit, and he tries to get that connection going with Walt through that, and Walt gets some of it, but he's not really quite sort of connecting with him, and then the sludge thing just happens. So I suppose we should talk about that a bit first. What do you think of their scenes together, Gale and Walt?
I do feel slightly sorry for Gale throughout all of this, because he is just being used as a pawn in the whole thing. There's nothing, you know, I mean, in another universe, the pair of them would have been perfectly good friends. It would have all been fine. I mean, there is kind of the suspicion of, you know, because we know from conversations that Gus has had earlier, you know, he's only employed Walt for a certain length of time. So ultimately there is, I'm sure, a slight suspicion of like, well, if Gale knows how to cook all this stuff, if he's learning how to do it from Walt, then Walt's not necessarily needed moving forward. And I mean, that's surely the reason why Gale has been put in there in the first place. So there is sort of part of that, I think, probably rattling around in Walt's head. But ultimately, I mean, they are very similar characters in their treating this like a business. But Walt needs to engineer a situation where he can create an opening for Jesse. And I mean, it's fairly clear, I think, that Walt intentionally gave him the wrong number. It wasn't an actual mistake of Gale's. He gave him the wrong number and then denied, you know, said it was supposed to be 85 and told him 75 and then claimed that he told him 85 afterwards. So that was clearly a setup. And then he makes the call to Gus saying, actually, the person that we should bring in is Jesse. And you don't really hear much of Gus's side of the conversation, I don't think, in that call, if I remember correctly. But you sort of get, you know, you can understand that Gus is sceptical about this. But, you know, he makes the decent case for it.
I think for Gus, it's more because he said, I don't deal with junkies and that. And it was, he's just reluctant to want Jesse involved in the situation. So
yeah, well, yes, but again, I do suspect that part of that is also he doesn't have control over Jesse. He has some control over Gail, you know. So there's that side of things as well. Whereas if it's just Walt and Jesse cooking together, he doesn't have eyes and ears in that lab, you know, and he doesn't have somebody that he can then kind of off Walt and then carry on cooking the same stuff afterwards, you know. So there's that side of things, I think, as well. Yeah, and then the sort of, well, you kind of knew that Jesse eventually was going to come round to agreeing to it. And a 50-50 partnership and all that sort of stuff.
One thing I find kind of curious about Breaking Bad, and I have each time I've watched it, is I remember through season 1, 2, and 3, obviously up to now, and I kept thinking, okay, when are they going to sit down properly and like really start cooking? And they do that somewhat in seasons 1 and 2 because they have the RV and they have that full day and all, you know, all the day out in the desert and all that sort of stuff. But after that happens, and this isn't a complaint, it's just an observation, there is a lot of stop-start in terms of them cooking and then not cooking and cooking and everything's getting complicated, but it's because of the things surrounding it. And I just remember I kept wondering, when are they going to properly sit down and, like, the super lab comes up and, oh, they can have a good, like, session in there and those sorts of things. And that does happen, obviously, you know, the super lab bits are coming up now. So that starts happening now, which is interesting because, well, we didn't know there were going to be 5 seasons necessarily or how many seasons there would be. Heck, the show almost got cancelled at one point, didn't it, because it wasn't really being watched and those sorts of things, and there was all the Channel 5 mucking it about and, you know, different things going. It wasn't the most straightforward of airing of a TV show, but we are now in season 3 episode 7, and even still now they haven't, they've cooked some stuff and they've cooked like bits off screen and that, but they've still not properly sat down for multiple episodes for sessions and stuff. Which I just find is a very curious point for the series. So,
yeah, I mean, I think some of that is how much of them actually cooking the meth do you want to show on screen is a certain amount of that. But the other thing is, how much meth do they actually necessarily need to cook? I mean, they did that sort of, you know, one big batch when they were out in the desert. We saw them do that, and we know they've cooked a little bit in between. And it's, you know, it's not like them baking, you know, pastries or something like that. And it's not like they've got a deal with a supermarket chain. Or, you know, it's not something that is, has that sort of level of, okay, you need to go in and cook like, you know, 3,000 of these every single day, because you're going to get to a point of, you actually, I mean, I would imagine you don't want to flood the entire market with a ridiculous overabundance of meth, because then it screws your profit margins, because if it's available absolutely everywhere,
right,
then it devalues it. So whilst yes, they need to cook a certain amount, and I mean, I guess Gus and these pals could be shipping it all over the world possibly, but I mean, they're only supposed to, I think, be selling in that particular territory, so there is only a certain amount of meth I'm fairly sure you'd be able to sell. So I mean, just purely from a business point of view, there is you know, and now they've got the super lab, and we know how much they cooked in that one day because we saw it in the first day of the super lab. So there is, it's, that's the sort of thing, is it, you know, they're probably stockpiling it for sale rather than actually just dumping it all straight out onto the market. So it's, there's not necessarily an urgency for them to be cooking huge amounts of it every single day. Even though, I mean, yeah, ultimately that is what they end up doing with the super lab, but, or that's what they're trying to do with the super lab, but it's not like you have to hit a quota for X amount being out on the street, you know. So Yeah, I mean, I do think it. How interesting is that going to be? I mean, you can do it with like montage things, but how interesting is it of just like seeing? It's a bit like, you know, the CSI bits where they're messing around with test tubes and stuff. It's you can do kind of a montage of that sort of stuff, but how interesting would it actually be to see them just cooking meth? You know, there's better things, I think, and better uses of the time in the show than just to actually show them cooking. So I sort of understand that. And you can make assumptions that they did some more cooking in the RV off screen and all that sort of stuff when they were in that position. And then now they're at the super lab, you know, we know they've been going in on various days and they're cooking in there. So, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, now they're going to be settled in the super lab, and be interesting to see here on out from the season, really. But before that, at the DEA office, Hank admits to assaulting Jesse and resulting in him being suspended without pay and having his gun confiscated. As Hank leaves, he learns Jesse is not pressing charges after all. Later, Hank is in an SUV in a parking lot when he gets a phone call. And an electronically disguised voice tells Hank he has 1 minute before two men show up and kill him. At first, he wonders if it's a prank call, obviously because he just had one, basically. But after 1 minute, they do actually show it on the car timer as well, which I thought was a good touch.
Mm-hmm.
But after 1 minute, Lionel and Marco arrive and ambush Hank. He reverses his car into Lionel, pinning him against another car and maiming him from the waist down. Then flees with Lionel's gun, because it sort of, he drops it into the car and he picks it up with his gun. Marco empties his gun at two passers-by and reloads, dropping the hollow point bullet in the process. It was a bit Zack Snyder, that bit, wasn't it? Yeah. Bit sort of I love Zack Snyder's slow-mo. Get ready for a Rebel Moon as well. Yeah, that was kind of a bit Zack Snyder-esque. Reloading. Knocking two down, shots down. Rather than shooting him dead, shoots Hank twice, knocking him down. Rather than shooting him in the head, which he could have just done there and then, believing that would be too easy. I'll talk about something with that in a minute. Marco decides to hack Hank to death with his axe and goes to retrieve it from his car. Hank then loads the hollow point bullet into Leonor's gun and kills Marco with a headshot, a gunshot to the head. Marco's axe lands right next to Hank, who falls unconscious. Well, he dies. They both die. So it says it falls unconscious from massive blood loss.
Hank doesn't die at that point, does he?
I still remember the first time I watched this. And it's the axe bit of like, okay, is he going to be able to get that bullet into that gun before this guy comes over? And he does it by like the skin of his teeth. I mean, he doesn't even put the, because he puts it into the chamber. He doesn't put it into the actual, magazine.
Yeah, yeah.
And then load it that way, which is obviously how you normally load a gun. And he like slots it in at the very last minute. Plus then it's, okay, even if he does do that, he's got to pretty much hit him in the head. Mm-hmm. Or maybe the neck or, you know, the upper area. But if he shoots him in, let's say, the shoulder or... if he shoots him in the shoulder, he might drop the axe or something. But he's really got to shoot him in the head here to be sort of safe. Because even if, let's say, he shoots him in the shoulder, he drops the axe, Hank's still the one really badly injured on the floor. So he could then just pick up the axe again and, I don't know. But he... Yeah. He got it done. And I remember being very nervous when I first watched this. Of like, and Hank's not well. He's not someone you don't care about. And it's complicated with him though because like, okay, you want him to leave Walt alone because you want him to succeed and get the money and all that kind of stuff. And Hank's sort of the one in the way. But you don't want him to die. You don't want anything like bad to happen to him. And he's not a villain, certainly. So he wanted him to survive here as well. But it's just that moment, like the axe gets raised. It's like, okay, you have to do it right now. You have to do it right now. Thankfully he managed to do it. Then you also realize it's basically the end of the cousins, which is interesting and kind of like strange as well. So it's a pretty incredible scene. It's a pretty incredible scene. I tried to notice as well, if we rewind a little bit, there's the bit where Jesse's on his hospital bed and you can see the time, I think, on his watch. And I think, I don't know if this is like supposed to be accurate or what's going on. On Jesse's watch, I think it says 3:58, so like 3:58 p.m. in the afternoon. And then on Hank's car clock, I think it goes from 3-something to 3-something. But it's not to 4 o'clock. It's like 3:02 to 3:00.
It's 3:00. Interestingly, the clock reads 3:07, which is also the episode number.
Oh, right. Does it go from 7 to 8?
Yeah, it goes from 7 to 8.
Huh.
There's a few little bits where the whole 1 minute thing comes up. The clock on his phone, after they become partners again, you see it pass from 1:57 to 1:58. The clock on Hank's car goes from 3:07, which is the episode number, to 3:08. The amount of time that Salamanca gives the kids when he's holding the kid's head underwater is he says you have 1 minute. So they use that 1 minute thing at a few different points as we go through. 3:08 is also Walt's address as well.
And the next episode. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he holds him down in the water for a few seconds or something, isn't it? So after a little bit of time, he then says, "How long do you think he has about another minute or something?" Yeah.
Yeah, one minute. Yeah. So they use the 1 minute thing at a few different places. I mean, which shows you the kind of care and crafting of the writing.
Definitely.
But
what's the average that you can hold your breath underwater?
Well, it varies. I mean, you can train to hold it for quite a reasonable length of time. I mean, there's people that have done it for, I'm sure there's people that can do it for like 20 minutes or so, but I mean, that's, how you do that, I don't
know. That's like half of this episode.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to look that up. I'm sure there's a Guinness record for it, but there are people that can hold it for a ridiculous length of time. Divers are trained to be able to hold their breath for it. Like I used to do some scuba dive training many, many years ago when I was a kid, and I could do it for about 4 minutes, I think, at one point, but that's the most I could like manage. But they do training for sort of holding your breath. I there's no way I could do it now. Lucky if I last a minute, I probably these days, but yeah.
I have no idea what mine would be. I've never really tried.
Yeah. So. You can train your body to do it. It's just very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, the whole scene is just great. I mean, it's really nicely set up. It's a nice, the setup and payoff of, I mean, you knew the moment that hollow point bullet was given to him is like a gift. You kind of knew that's going to come back in somewhere. And Hank using it to kill him at the end is a really good way of setting that up. The person that, there's some discussion about who the person is that actually makes the call to Hank, because obviously it's done at the suggestion of Gus, because Gus sees this as a sort of win-win situation, because either the cousins are killed, which is fine, because that means, I mean, they were killed going after the target that they wanted to go. I mean, you know, they wanted to go after Heisenberg, but they said no. But
yeah.
This was a target he gave them permission to go after, and they went after him. So that's fine. It also, if they're killed doing that, it kind of gives Gus cover, because the chances are those two have not told anybody else that Gus has given them permission to do that. So Gus can just go, well, they went after a DEA agent, what do you expect?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
And can cover and can blame it all on them. If they kill Hank, so what? They've killed a DEA agent. You know? But on the flip side of that, he's going to give Hank warning. As to the person on the other end of the call, I thought it sounded like Mike's voice disguised. The actor that plays Victor,
we haven't seen him for a bit. Mike.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. The actor that plays Victor suggests that it was actually him that did it, and it was also him that texted the Polos message at the request of Gus, who's Victor's, like, Gus's right-hand man.
Yeah.
He suggested that it's actually him that did it.
He's the one that, he's the one that gave Walt that half, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. So, but I don't know. It sounded like Mike actually doing it on the phone to me. It couldn't have been Gus for two reasons. One was, I think Gus's accent is very quite distinctive. Even if he disguised it, it's still got an accent to it. So it would have been a bit too obvious. The actual reason that they definitely didn't use Gus for it is because it would have it would have put Giancarlo over the amount of episodes that he was contracted for if they just used him on that voice. so they couldn't use
right.
him for that, so they didn't want to just waste him on, obviously, on a little kind of, you know, particularly when you couldn't tell his voice was. So, and it wasn't really important that Gus did it himself anyway, so yeah, that kind of makes sense.
Yeah Do we find out who it actually was? I can't remember.
No, I don't think so. That's why there's sort of been some discussion online about it. Like I say, to me, it sounded like Mike, but the guy that plays Victor says it was Victor. So.
There you go. Also, that's the end of the episode. So,
yes.
There we go with that, and we'll see what happens next. Tell you what, Hank does go through it in this show.
Yeah, yeah.
Exploding head thing, or the tortoise in the head thing. Bar fight, people doubting him, everybody's on his back, then this happens, and he's already got PSD from the previous thing, and now he's got this going on, and he's also badly injured. God, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the irony of this, of course, is the fact that if the cousins had actually left Hank alone, because this is going to give Hank a bit more sympathy with the DEA, because, you know, these drug guys, he clearly was onto something, because these drug guys have gone after him. Whereas had the cousins just left him alone, he would have just been probably suspended for beating up Jesse, and that would have been it, you know. And he probably, you know, his career would have been over and he wouldn't get to come back. But given that he's now been shot in, essentially, in the line of duty, because it was drug people that came after him, I can't remember exactly how it happens, but I suspect there is a way that he gets back in purely because of this, because of their actions.
Yeah.
Whereas had they just left him, he wouldn't, you know, he'd had no further influence. So
there we go. All right, let's get in some feedback, some emails. We've got two this week. If you'd like to write in, let us know any thoughts, feelings, questions, comments, etc., etc. Matthew at entertainmenttalk.org, Twitter, eTalkUK. Nobody's calling it X, so it's Twitter, eTalkUK. well done, Elon. You paid, I can't remember, it was a 40? Yeah, 40 billion for a thing, and you tried to change the name, and now it's just a joke to everybody. So Twitter, eTalkUK, and there's information in your show notes. Abed writes in first, says, "Hey, been a while. I hope this both finds you well." I think we're both well, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
"I have yet to see Better Call Saul and wanted to ask if I should jump on it now. Will it spoil anything or what should I do? Thanks." I mean, you can watch it whenever you like. But if you're talking about in terms of, do you want to wait for us to finish this podcast and then watch Better Call Saul, we don't even know how long that will take us to do. Because it depends on... because out of the shows we cover weekly, this is the only one we can control as to when we come back to it. And obviously when things like Last of Us come back, or House of Dragon, or if AMC decides to show us Walking Dead ever again, then obviously we don't want to... The idea is to spread things out and not overlap things, so that you spread content out over the course of a year. What should you do? See, it's interesting you asked that, because I remember before... and I had a little bit of the same effect with this with Wonder Woman. I'll explain what I mean in a minute. Of when we first see Saul in this show, and because we've gone through Better Call Saul since then, and we know more about we know his backstory essentially more, and it gives you a different insight to him. Like I didn't really mention it in this episode, but almost every single scene we've seen him in this show since coming away from Better Call Saul, I've looked at him differently, because we've seen his story. So you can either do that and have the same effect. It does. I don't think it specifically will spoil Breaking Bad. I mean, it will spoil it in terms of like what happens to him.
Yes.
But if you're not concerned about knowing that, because essentially it covers before, a little bit during, and after Breaking Bad as well. So you get all of his story. But it doesn't sort of step on Breaking Bad's toes, really, in that kind of
no,
way.
No, not directly. You know, you see sort of Hector pre-wheelchair. You know, there are things like that in it, and you get some background to that. A lot more Mike. You do see Gus in that show as well. You get a lot more of sort of Mike's background. And see, I'm sort of the opinion that you probably should watch Breaking Bad first and then Better Call Saul. It's the same thing that I always say about the Star Wars movies. If you're watching, you don't want to watch them in chronological order for the first time.
No.
You don't start at episode one and go through to the, well, I would ignore the sequels, but you start with the original trilogy. That's where I would start with Star Wars, because the problem is, it's the same way if you say you look at Soul slightly differently. The problem is, if you don't start with the original trilogy and you show it to kids from episode one, by the time that they get to episode four, A New Hope, because they know the background. And that's a problem, because they're far more sympathetic towards Darth Vader than they should be, when it really should be this big, scary sort of masked guy up and destroying everything, who's like the epitome of pure evil. You don't get that if you start at episode one. So you sort of, and it's a little bit like that with this, in that you know a lot more about Saul. I don't think it's quite as bad in terms of how it changes the character, but it does make you look at him slightly differently. And that's not how it was released, so it's not really how it was designed to be watched. So I even though it's a prequel, the problem is it has the other problem is, like you say, is it's before, during, and after. You know, most of it is before, but there are large sections of like tags that go on to that show that show what happened to that shows after Breaking Bad and what happens to Saul there. So I don't know. I personally would get through all of Breaking Bad and then go and watch Better Call Saul afterwards. I'd do it that way. But I mean, you know, you're not going to be massively spoiled, but that's the way I would probably do it.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I was going to mention, for Wonder Woman, when I did that that Snyderverse podcast project, and what I did was I watched Man of Steel, then Wonder Woman, then BVS, then the Snyder Cut. Obviously, I didn't go anywhere near Justice League, because why would I do that? That's not Snyder's version. One of the reasons I did that is I wanted to sort of try to do it in more of an origins way. The problem is that obviously there's no Batman film and all that kind of stuff, whatever. But it's interesting because obviously the original release we had was Man of Steel 2013, BVS 2016, Wonder Woman 2017, then Snyder Cut, well, it was supposed to be 2017, but 2021. And when you are watching BVS, and if you haven't seen Wonder Woman at that point, and she drops down and she makes her really, really cool intro, one of DC's best ever scenes, probably. Mm-hmm. And, okay, you're vaguely aware of who she is and that, but you don't know her story. She drops down and basically saves Batman's life and enters the story. You then, after that, you go to her film. Whereas when I did my, because I chose to do it in the way of, okay, I want to watch the origin bits first of Man of Steel, mm-hmm. and then Wonder Woman, she drops down in, obviously she appears in the film, but she's as Diana and she's interacting with Bruce and with Clark and all that. But as soon as she drops down, because she literally like jumps in the way of Doomsday's thing, and her intro plays, I already know who she is. So it depends on what way around you want to do that sort of thing. Yeah. In terms of, like, okay, do you want to wait for us to finish covering this show and stuff? I mean, ultimately, it's up to you. I don't really know what I'd say in terms of that. Like, that part's your sort of choice.
I mean, so, as you say, be aware, it may be a while. Because we honestly don't know when we're going to get through the seasons of this, because, as you say, we have full control.
We're not
of when
rushing
we do it
through it. Like, we're going to... Yeah. It's out, whenever we're going to have those gaps in the year and stuff. So... Yeah. Caroline asks, hey guys, thanks again for the great conversation and how you handled my previous questions. Remember you, Caroline. Yep, thank you for your questions and stuff. It says, my husband supports Everton. I'm very sorry to hear that. well, they've scored no goals and lost all three games so far. So, and they were 1 point off getting relegated last season. So I'm sorry about that. So I follow the football lightly. In any case, could you try and compare what Ted did to what City did, so we can both understand both better? Also, no spoilers, please, but do you remember if Ted gets caught or not? I can't remember if he gets caught. I remember I remember Ted's final scene, but I can't remember how he gets there. I can remember the thing that happens, because we haven't seen him for a couple of episodes either.
No.
But in terms of him doing the cooking the books thing, I can't remember. I can't remember, in fact, if that comes back up again, but I guess we'll all discover that for ourselves again.
I have a vague recollection that it does, but I can't remember how and how it plays into it. So,
To compare both those things, what City have done is a bit more complicated, because with what Ted's done is seems just, okay, he's cooked the books, but he's not done... Obviously, what he's doing functions completely differently to what City... are doing anyway, because they're a football club and, you know, sponsors and all that sort of stuff. The basic stuff of what they've been accused of, because there's quite a lot, actually. I mean, there's 115 charges, so there's a lot of stuff in there. And it's not all just rule break. There's all, like, different weird things going on. And I can't get into all that here. The basics of it is they've lied about how much income they've had. Obviously, they've done the cooking the books thing. The way they've done that, though... is because they've got, obviously, their investors, who are the Saudi people, because it's Etihad Airways that are their actual sponsor. And obviously, they've got other smaller sponsors, because every club does that. I know that that's what they've got on their shirt, but every club has, like Man United have Nike and TeamViewer, and then there's other, like, noodle deals and all this other kind of stuff. So there's lots of things.
Yeah, people to do deals to sell things in the stand and have... things around the edges.
Things like that. They've essentially, because they don't get as much income as they've told you, and one of the reasons that's blatantly obvious is because they've never filled out their stadium, which for a top flight football club, you would have thought they might have done that, but that doesn't need to be revealed to you. You can see it on screen when you watch them play, because their stadium's not full, which is weird, and they want to expand it, which would only expose that more. It's very weird. Essentially, they've said, hey, we've earned this much from sponsors, but they haven't, because the people who are investing or slipping money into the club, let's call it, they've tried to mask it as if that is their sponsored income, which is cheating, because then what you're able to do is say, hey, we earned, I'm just going to throw out random numbers, we've earned 500 million this year, but you've actually only earned 200, let's say, but 300 of it is because of Saudi investment and other things that are going on. But what that allows you to do is build a super team and buy Haaland and buy Mahrez, you know, all these players that they've built over the years, which leads you to win. Well, spoiler alert, when you have essentially a super team and a really good manager, it allows you to win trophies, which is why the fact of, okay, then winning the treble and all that kind of stuff this year, does it really count? Should you actually be able to have the squad that you've got and be able to, you know, literally win the matches with those teams? That's the way that I look at that anyway, because if that's the case, then that's sort of how that works. There's other, like, weird stuff as well that's going on, but they've done the cooking the books thing in a bit of a different way, because obviously Ted in the show is not saying, hey, we've been sponsored by so-and-so, because that's not how that company works. So hopefully that explains it a little bit. Do you know much about it, or have any questions or anything like that?
No, I mean, I don't really follow, you know, I don't follow football at all, but the Man City thing. So, I mean, they basically, yeah, like you say, they're saying they've got like, say, 500 million in sponsorship. In actual fact, they've only earned 200 million, but the Saudis have put an extra 300 million in as an investment. Yeah,
those and other people.
But, right, okay.
Secret investors or whatever.
Yeah, and whilst that, I'm guessing they are allowed to do that, but not in the way that they've done it. Because I don't see why...
Not if you lie about it, no.
No, no, I can't see why that would be a problem if they're saying, okay, we're going to... Because it's like, you know, with, say, Wrexham, if they, you know, if the two guys there...
Ryan and Rob, yeah.
Yeah, want to invest, you know, need to invest like 3 million to buy players... then they invest 3 million to buy players, but it's not like, but they're not trying to claim that they got it from selling t-shirts, you know,
or yeah, sponsorship through natural income. Yeah.
Through natural income. It's an investment. So yeah, I think there seems to be some sort of dodgy tax thing going on if that's how they're doing it. So I suspect that must be the problem. I mean, as I say, I've not looked into it, so I have no idea if that is the case, but from what you're saying, yeah, sounds to be it. In terms of cooking the books here, it's basically, it seems to be he's inflating the numbers to make it look like the company is more solvent than it is, which is a slightly different thing, because that's I mean, again, it depends. We don't know the exact makeup of his company. We don't know whether his company's got investors or whether he just owns it or what the deal is there. So we don't know exactly how he's cooked the books. We just know he's the numbers in his sales and stuff don't actually tally with what they're actually making necessarily. So
yeah. One other thing I did read, the last bit I'll talk about, is they had a CEO for one of the companies who's one of the quote-unquote sponsors, and apparently that person, like, wasn't listed where they were supposed to be, or that person doesn't exist or something like that, which is a really weird thing to do.
That's a real problem, yes.
Yeah. There's lots of videos and stuff you can look at out there on that. The only problem is we haven't had any new information for about 6 months. So, we'll see. In terms of Ted, I can't remember if he gets caught or not. But I do remember what happens to him. So, that's a little while away. that's a little while away yet. So, anyway, that's the end of the podcast. In the meantime, you can find everything else that we do on entertainmenttalk.org. TV, games, films, main night podcast. Take a look out for what we do and all that kind of stuff. Word of mouth, social media, and listening to more podcasts is how you can also support us as well. And Patreon, $5, $10 level tiers. Every podcast review options. Look for that as well if you'd like to. TV and film news, Geek Town Radio, Tuesdays, and geektown.co.uk. David, that is your thing. What's going on over there?
We've got obviously air dates and stuff going up and trailers and things. It's been a slightly slower week this week than it was the week before, because there was all the stuff from Edinburgh last week. There was a big film festival up there, or TV festival up there. We've got things being picked up. We've got things being dropped. We've had things being cancelled. All sorts of stuff. The podcast this week, we talked about Daryl on from Hollywood North News. So we talked about Ahsoka, because that is obviously launched on Disney Plus. We talked a bit about Quantum Leap and Ghosts and a little game called Stacklands, the Ben Affleck movie Hypnotic, Cruel Summer, which is on Prime Video here, lots and lots of stuff, bits and pieces about the strike as well, and a bunch of new dramas coming to BBC. So lots of stuff up on there. That's Geek Town Radio 394. You can go and find that wherever you get your podcasts.
Excellent. So go and check out all that. You can also find Bex over on Twitch, Trista Bytes, for Retro Chat Game and other streams. I believe she's on her way back, I think, from Germany. And
yes, she was still stuck in Germany yesterday, I think, but hopefully she's on her way back.
Yeah, so you can find her over there. Go and support what she's doing on Twitch and other platforms. Just search for Trista Bytes. Me over on Twitch at eTalk UK and YouTube Entertainment Talk Plays. One last thing before we go. we can all breathe a sigh of relief. We've actually signed Amrabat. I think I was mentioning him earlier. We were supposed to sign him in June, but, you know, Glazers, club, etc. Awesome. So, will we see him on Sunday? I don't know. Anyway, thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.